Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Ksubas Daf Samach Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur 7 lines from the top of Daf Samach Dalet. Omar of Tuvi Bar Kisna, Omar Shmuel. Kaisvin Igeres Mered al Arusa, the Ain Kaisvin Igeres Mered al Shemeres Yavam. This concept of Igeres Mered is the topic that we started in our last year. This is a reference to a woman that rebels against her husband. The simple case, we'll say the case that's accepted unanimously, is a situation where a woman refuses to provide intimacy with her husband. In other words, she refuses to be with him as a man and wife. In such a case, there is a procedure that we saw in our last year where there is a reduction made in her ksuba. The original takon, the original enactment was on a weekly basis, 7 dinar or 7 tarpikin, according to Rabbi Yehuda, are reduced. Then there was a later enactment, and as we saw in our previous shiur. But all of that is contained within this reference to the Igeres Mered, a proclamation or a declaration that this woman is rebelling and she stands to lose out on her ksuba and be divorced. So Shmuel says that this is done with regard to an arusa, but not done with regard to a shomeres yavam. A shomeres yavam being a woman whose husband had died, leaving no children, but leaving a surviving brother, her brother-in-law. And if she is rebelling against the Yavam, so we don't follow the procedure that we mentioned just a moment before. The Gemara asks, Meisvei, Achas li arusa unesua afilu nida v'afilu chola v'afilu shomeres Yavam. This is a quote from the Tanaic source that we learned in our previous year, and the full source was found on Samach Gimel Amud Beis, in which the law of Moredis was featured, and all of these women are grouped together. And what do you notice? Even the Shomeres Yavam, as you can see, it's dashed underline. Now, we have a question, therefore, on Shmuel. We glance at the side where we have a Nosei Mivneh, a topic heading and structural note, which features the triangle that you'll see in this Gemara as the Sugya unfolds. The triangle represents Shuvos Liyashev Bein Shmuel Vabraisa Binyan Ksivas Igeres Mered Al Yevoma Lafsida Ksubasa. These are attempts with the triangle point facing up. They're attempts to resolve the problem where Shmuel on the one hand says, Ein Kaisvin Igeres Mered Al Shomeres Yavam, and the Tanaic source says yes. The inverted triangle represents Kushos Al Atshuvos. They're questions with regard to the answer that was given previously. So now the Gemara. Answer number one, Lo Kashya. Kan Shetovahu, Kan Shetovahi. The Braisa is where the Yavam, the husband, is seeking her out, and she is rebelling. Shmuel's Din is where she is seeking out the Yibum, and he is refusing. The Omar of Tachlifa Bar Avimi Omar Shmuel, Tova Hu Nizkokinlo. If he seeks out the Yavama and she rebels, so we Nizkoken lo means we will write the Igeres Mered, which ultimately benefits him, and so in the sense that she will end up losing out the Ksuba. Tova hi, ein Nizkoken lo. If she is seeking out the Yivum, and he doesn't want to go ahead with it, so we don't write the Igeres Mered, which otherwise would have entitled her to an increase in the Ksuba, as we learned in our previous year. B'mai ukimta leha d'Shmuel. So how did we set up Shmuel's din of Ein Kaisvin? B'shetova hi, where she was seeking out. Now, the Gemara raises a question. It's a question, we call it a grammatical type question. Hi, Kaisvin Igeres Mered Al Arusa, in the original statement of Shmuel, it was that's what we saw. Well, instead of saying that, and by the way, it's a little star, you can see which directs your attention to the star above on that line is where we saw Shmuel saying this. If the case of Shmuel, where we said where he said Ein Kaisvin Igeres Mered Al Shomeres Yavam, so then the language would be, it should have been Kaisvin Igeres. Let me read that line again. Hi Kaisvin Igeres Mered Al Arusa Le Arusa Mi Boyale. It should have said that in the case where we will write the ksub, the Igeres Mered, and it will, and as Shmuel said, it was a case of Tavahi, where she is seeking out the bonding. So in the case of the Shomeres Yavam, we don't write it, but in the case of the Arusa, we will write it. And she is seeking out the bonding. And therefore, when we write the Geres Mered, we're writing it in a fashion that she is going to receive more and more. It's going to be to her benefit. So that the language of Shmuel, of Kaisun Igeres Mered al Arusa, is not accurate. Le Arusa mi Bayale. It should have said, for her. We write it not regarding her, but for her benefit. After all, we explained that Shmuel is referring to a case of Tavahi. So the Gemara answers, as far as the issue of the grammar is concerned, ha lo kashya. This isn't a problem. Tani le arusa. If it's a matter of altering the text of the original statement of Shmuel, the change between the word al and the and dropping the ayin so that you have just le arusa, that's a minor problem, and therefore make that change and teach it. Teach Shmuel's point as Kaisvin Igeres Mered le arusa, because in that case where we described Shmuel saying she is seeking out the bonding and he is the one who is rebelling, refusing to go along. The Gemara asks, "My shna shomeres yavam delo." In the case of Shmuel, he said that where she's tovas, the shomeres yavam, you have the widow and the brother-in-law, and she is seeking out the marriage with him, and he is refusing. He's rebelling. We don't write an Igeres Mered for her benefit. The Amrinon law, we tell her, Zil lo mifkidis, go. You don't have to get married because you're not commanded. Mifkidis means commanded in the mitzvah of reproduction. So on those grounds, so like no big deal if okay, you want to get married, but and he doesn't want. What's the big pressure for you to want to get married to him? You're not commanded in having children. That's a man's commandment. Well, Arusanami, namele, then in the case of the Arusa, let us say the same thing. Zeal. Lo mifkidis, go. You're not commanded. So that even though you entered the first stage of the marital bond, but he doesn't want to go ahead with the marriage and you do, we shouldn't be writing an Igeres Mered for her benefit. when she's not commanded in the mitzvah of having children, i.e. having a family, which is accomplished through marriage. And yet, Shmuel said that we do write an igeres merit for the arusa. Ela, bebal machmas taina. The arusa is coming with a reason, a claim. The omra, the lady is saying, I want children. Bo'ina chutra liyado mor lekvura. Literally, I want a stick, a walking stick for my hand, and I want a shovel for my burial. Meaning, I want a son. I want children. I want a son that will help me walk around in my old age, support me, physically support me, and I want a son that will take care of my burial. So, regardless of the mitzvah aspect, the woman wants children for, we'll say, practical reasons. And that's the reason that we write the Igeres Mered on behalf of the Arusa when she wants to get married, she wants to go ahead with consummating the marriage and he rebels. She has a strong claim, and she's entitled, therefore, to the weekly increase in the ksuba. Well, hachinami shomeres yavam bebal machmas tainus. So why don't we apply the same standard to the case of the shomeres yavam? She wants to get married. She wants to have a child that will take care of her in her old age and after her death. So why there do we ignore her claims or her wishes? You'll see that we have a double underline just to highlight the uniformity of structure that this Gemara presents. We've highlighted this expression Ela Edividi, means both the Shmuel and the Brisa and the Tanaic source that we saw Shetova Hu. The man is the one that wants to go ahead with the marriage, and she is resisting. She is rebelling. Well, if the circumstances of Shmuel and the Brisa are the same, so how do we resolve the difference between them? The lo kashya. And there's no problem with regard to the Yavoma. Kan lachloitz v'kan liyabe. We will write the Geras Mered where he wants to do Chalitza. And we won't write the Geras Mered where what he is seeking out is the marriage with her, with the Yibum. The Omer of Pedosom Rabbi Yochanan, Tova Lachlotz, Nizkokin Lo, if he is desirous of Chalitza, he wants her to participate in the shoe removal ceremony that releases her, and that's what he wants and she refuses. So Nizkokin Lo, we will write the Igeres Mered. And that's what the Brisa was talking about. Tova Liyabeim, Ein Nizkokin Lo. However, if he is seeking her out in order to marry her, so then we don't write the Igeres Mered for him. The Gemara asks, "My shna liyabim dolo." Why, in the case of Yibum, do we say that we don't answer his claims or his desires, his wishes? We don't write the Igeres Mered, which would in effect reduce her ksuba. The Amrinon Le, we tell him, what do you have to be fixated on her for? Zil v'nosev itzachriti, go marry another woman. Lachlotz nami. In the case where he is seeking out Chalitza, she refuses. Name Ole, let us say to him, Zil v'nosev itza achriti, go marry another woman. What do you have to be so fixated on doing Chalitza with her? What's preventing you from going to marry another woman? Ella, Diomar, the husband, or the Yavam, has a claim. He says, Kevon da'agido bi, since she is attached to me. Without doing chalitza, she cannot marry anyone else. The Torah expects her to marry him, the surviving brother, or her brother-in-law. She's attached to him. For whatever reason, she doesn't want to do the chalitza ceremony, but in the meantime, he has this feeling that she's attached to me, and since she's attached to me, lo ko yahavu li achriti. They're not giving to me another woman. In other words, other women don't want to marry me because I'm a fellow that's got this this sister-in-law attached to him. And as a result of that, he has a claim. That's what we said when it's tova lachlots niskokin lo. He has a strong claim. Well, hochanami, in the case of tova liyabim, where he wants to marry her and she refuses, kevan dagida b, the same problem arises since she's attached to him. Lo ko yavu li achriti. No one else, no other lady is going to be given over to him. And therefore, for us to tell him, go marry some other lady, that's not reason for us to say, ein niskokin lo. That's not going to be a good explanation for Shmuel, who said that we don't write Igeres Merit al Shomeres Yavim, and you wanted to say that's in a case where he's tevel yabim. He is in trouble, and she is not cooperating with him, so why don't we help him out? Elo idi v'idi shetova liyabim. Both in the case of the Bryce, in the case of Shmuel, he is seeking out the Yavama for Yibum purposes. He wants to marry her, and she is refusing. If that's the case, if they both have the same circumstances, then why is there a distinction with regard to the Moredes, whereby Shmuel says we don't write an Igeres Merit, and in the Brisa we do? But it's the same circumstances, Velo Kasha, there's no difficulty. Kan Kamishna Rishona, Kan Kamishna Achrina. There was an early teaching, and then a later enactment, Disnan, and things will become clear when we learn the source. Mitzvahs Yibum Koidemes LeMitzvahs Chalitza. Bo Rishona Shoyu Miskavnim L'Shu Mitzvah. There is precedence given to the Mitzvah of Yibum over the Mitzvah of Chalitza. Both are legitimate tracks when dealing with a widow of a husband that left no children and there's a surviving brother. Originally, when the marriage was done with pure Mitzvah purposes in mind, as the Torah dictates that the surviving brother will maintain the name of his deceased brother through having children with the widow, that's the mitzvah, and then we prefer Yibum over Chalitza. Achshav, but nowadays, She'ein miskavnin l'shum mitzvah, people's minds are not as pure, and the brother-in-law sees his sister-in-law, and he might very well have a sense of attraction to her outside the realm of mitzvah. People don't have that level of purity of thought anymore. Omru, so the sages ruled mitzvahs chalitza kedemes lemitzvahs ibum. Chalitza is preferable. Therefore, both Shmuel and the Tanaic source are talking about a man that wants to do Yibum, and she is refusing. In the old days, and that's what the Tanaic source was referring to, he has the upper hand. His claim is a strong claim, and she's rebellious. Therefore, she will lose out. She's a widow that would have been entitled to receive a ksuba, but it's going to be reduced. However, in later times, and that's what Shmuel was referring to, he is insistent on something that he really shouldn't do. He's insisting on marrying her, but we prefer that they do chalitza. We don't see any indication that she's resisting doing the chalitza. All she's resisting is doing the yibum. And she has a right to resist doing the yibum. And therefore, her refusal to do yibum is not something that we're going to... we're not going to cause her any loss as a result of her resisting doing Yibum, when in fact she's chosen the correct path. Ad Mosai Hu Poches V'chulei. In the Mishnah we saw a machlokes between the Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi the Tanakama mentioned that we reduce the ksuba of a moredes by 7 dinarim per week. According to Rabbi Yehuda, 7 tarp'ikin. The Gemara asks, my tarp'ikin, what is that? Omar Rav Sheshes Astira. Astira is a coin known as, Rashi says, Sela Medina. Vakama Astira, how much is an Astira? Palga Dezuza. It is half a Zuz. There are different coinage standards that you see in the Shas, in the Talmud. One of the prominent dual coin standards is Kesef Medina versus Kesef Tzuri. The same names are attached to the two coinage systems. However, the Sela Tzuri has a value of 8 times more than the Sela Medina, than the Medina coinage with the same name. So that the Gemara, in asking how much is an Astira, the Gemara answers it is half a Tzuri Zuz. So, as we've written in above the Gemara, between the lines, an Astira is a half Tzuri Zuz, which is also to be noted as 3 Mo'o Kesef. It's another coin, another name, 3 silver Mo'o. Tanya Nami Hachi, a brisa that supports this. Rabbi Omer, Shloisha Tarp'ikin, Shehein Teisha Moyin. 3 Tarp'ikin is the equivalent of 9 Moyin, and a Mo'o, which comes out to Mo'o V'chetzi L'chol Yom, not including Shabbos. This Taneg source is referring to a case where the husband is moreid, and we have to increase her ksuba. So Rabbi Yehuda says the way, the amount that it, with which we increase her ksuba, is it'll be 3 tarpikin a week, which is the equivalent of 9 moin. That shows you that 1 tarpik equals 3 ma'a, which comes out to be ma'a v'chetzi l'chol yom. Not including Shabbos, you have 6 times 1.5. 6 times 1.5 ma'a per day. That will bring you to a total of 9 moyen, which is the same as 3 tarpikin, being that each tarpik contains 3 Mo'o Kesef. Before we continue in the Gemara, we have a topic heading on the side. Hezber Hevdel HaKaspi Bein HaMoredes. We're going to explain the difference money-wise, or say the reason there is a difference in amounts between a woman who is rebellious, where we find Shemafchisin Mimeno Tarpik Liom, we reduce her ksuba to the tune of 1 tarpik per day, the Kolel Shabbos. It's according to Rabbi Yehuda, for example, it's 7 tarpiks a week. So it's including Shabbos, you would figure it's 1 tarpik per day, 7 days a week, 7 tarpiks per week. Levain Amoyrid Alishto, as opposed to a man who rebels against his wife, Shemoisifin Lo Rak Chatzi Tarpik Liyom, where we find that we add to her ksuba only half a tarpik per day. V'ain Toisefes L'Shabbos, and we also do not recognize Shabbos as a day where she will receive more. So on a, if you focus on a, let's say, a daily amount, the man is going to be receiving, in other words, they're be adding to, I should say that the man is going to be able to reduce the amount he pays by 1 full tarpik per day. And the woman, when we talk about her ksuba being increased, it's only going to be increased by half a tarpik per day. So this is a certain level, what would appear on the surface as being inequality. the Gemara. Omar le Rav Chiya bar Yosef l'Shmuel. My shno ihu, what is different about him? Meaning when she is rebelling, the Yavinon le the Shabbos, the seven tarpik figure, which is one tarpik per day, we enable him to benefit, including Shabbos. Maishno ihi, when she is rebellious, de lo yavinon lo de Shabbos, where we don't acknowledge Shabbos in our increase of her ksuba, whereby we say she receives only one half a tarpik per day, resulting in a total of three per week. The Gemara answers, ihi, when it comes to a case where she is rebelling, and the result of that is a reduction in her ksuba, the mifchis ka pachis, where when she's rebelling, we reduce the amount entitled to the woman. Lo merci kischar Shabbos. We're not given the impression that she is getting paid for Shabbos. There's no additional payment being made. There's subtraction that's taking place. So it doesn't appear as if there is payment or income enjoyed on Shabbos as a result of Shabbos. Of course, we're working with the premise that everyone understands that one is not supposed to be paid for work he does on Shabbos. Ihu, the man, when he is rebelling, what happens? We're increasing, we're paying, we're proactive in that sense that we're adding to the woman's ksuba, the oisaifi ka moisva, there is addition that's taking place, there's payment, so to speak. We continue at the top of Omid Beis, merci kischar Shabbos. It gives the impression as if there is profiteering taking place on Shabbos as well. And therefore we don't want to, in case of the man who is rebelling, and we're going to be paying to the lady, we don't want to have a situation, at least a financial arrangement, where we don't create the impression that she is receiving something for Shabbos as well. Omar le Rav Chiya bar Yosef l'Shmuel. It's interesting to note, by way of names, it was just in the previous question we had Rav Chiya bar Yosef as well. Asking the question. Here again you see him asking the question. A new question. Ma bein moreid lemoredis. What is the difference? What do we mean by what's the difference? When the man rebels, we see that we're acknowledging that by adding to her only a half a tarpik per day. And when she rebels, she gives up a full tarpik per day. Why that discrepancy, that seeming inequality? Omar le, say ulamad mishuk shel zaynos. So Shmuel, and it's so interesting how we've made this point many times. It's a theme that here at Gemara Markings we try to emphasize throughout the Shas, how the Shas deals on a very earthly level. He says, you want to know what the difference is? You go and take a look. Analyze what happens when it comes to a man seeking out female companionship, if you want to put it in those nice, politically correct terms, or a man who's seeking out female comfort, as is in the case of harlotry. What takes place? Mi socher es mi. Who hires whom? Who is, we'll say, who is more desperate, if we can put it in those common terms? Who needs to hire whom? Rashi, mi socher es mi, hevi omer ha'ish, socher es ha'isha. It's the man who's desperate. Shama mino tsa'aroi meruba. The fact that he is seeking out the harlot shows that he is experiencing greater pain by having those needs, let's say, deprived from him. So that if the if his wife is rebelling, so she is creating more tsar than when he is rebelling against her. Therefore, that increased pain that the man feels is manifest in this discrepancy or seeming inequality in money terms. Dover Acher, another explanation, Ze Yitzro mi bachutz, Ze Yitzro mi bifnim. Rashi says, Yitzro mi bachutz, Yitzro means literally is one's inclination. It's the male, and here we need to deal with, we need to recognize male physiology as well. Rashi says, Kishuyo niker umizgane. When a man has a desire for intimacy, so the male organ takes on a different form than it usually is when a person is, we'll say, at rest. And it's something that is visible, and it's a source of gnai. It's not something that we'll say, it's not something that increases one's honor when it's noticeable by others. So the man, once again, he experiences this increased, we'll say, form of shame when he is deprived from this particular need, and hence her depriving him of it, her rebellion is a more serious matter than when it's the other way around. Before we continue with the Mishnah, we glance at the side under our nosei, our topic heading. We've written kamut, quantity, kamut hamozoin shechayev odom lesapek lishto. How much food is a person expected to provide his wife? Mi shemefarnes oiso derech apotropos. The Mishnah will be featuring a case where the husband has entrusted, we'll say, the obligation of one's wife receiving a food allowance to an executor. So you have a case where the husband and wife are not living together in a regular home situation. Maybe the husband went abroad and he's entrusting the funds needed to purchase food for his wife in the hands of an apotropos, an executor. So now, how much does the husband have to provide? The Mishnah. Hamashre es ishto al yedei sholish. A man who was mefarnes his wife through an intermediary. Lo yivchois lo, he shall not provide any less per week, mishnei kavim chitim, o me'arbo kavim sorin. Not less than two kav. Kav is a measure, two kav of chita, of wheat, or four kav of sorim. Om Rabbi Yossi, lo posak lo sorim elo Rabbi Shmuel, here we're going to translate, leaving room for the Gemara to change or elucidate some of these points beyond the simple translation level. But as we learn the Mishnah, we'll just focus on the translation. Rabbi Yossi says that only Rabbi Shmuel, who was near Edom, would make an allowance for barley. The Nosein law chatzi kav kitnis. In addition to the wheat allowance, there is a half a kav of kitnis, type of legume. V'chatzi lug shemen, a half a lug is a measure, a liquid measure. A half a lug of oil. V'kav grogros o monodvela, a kav of kav is a measure of dried figs. Or a mona. Mona is a weight of devela. Vela are pressed figs. So there might be either loose dry figs or pressed figs. V'im ein lo, and if he doesn't have that, posek lumosam, in their stead he is to supply peros mimokom acher, fruit from some other place. V'nosein lo mita mapetz umachzeles, he's to provide for a bed. A mapetz and machzeles are types of mats. A mapetz, Rashi says, is softer than a machzeles. The nosein law kipo l'rosha, and he's to provide a type of head covering on an annual basis. That's a kippa. The Rosh Rashi uses an expression, sa'if. That's a type of headgear on an annual basis. V'chagor l'masneha, a belt. U'min olim mi moyed l'moyed, and shoes thrice annually from holiday to holiday. V'kelim shel chamishim zuz mishana l'shana, and a wardrobe of clothing. Kelim is a reference here to clothing amounting to 50 zuz once a year. V'ein noisnim lo lo chadoshim b'mois hachamim v'lo shchokim b'mois hakshamim. And he is not to provide new clothing, are as opposed to worn clothing. New clothing are thicker, so they will create more body heat. So that one should, that's not to be chadoshim. New clothing are not to be provided for her during the summer season. V'lo shchokim, nor worn out clothing, which by their very nature are thinner and less insulatory, therefore they should not be provided during the rainy season, the cold season. Ela noisein lo kelim shel chamishim zuz b'mois hagshamim. Rather, the 50 zuz worth of clothing are provided during the cold season. V'miskaseh b'vloisein b'mois hachama, and she'll continue wearing them as they are more worn out during the summer, when she doesn't need the body heat to be preserved. V'ashchokim shela. Shchokim means when they get worn out, even when she gets new clothing, she keeps the worn out clothing of the previous year. You'll ask, what does she need to keep the worn out clothing for? We'll see that later. Noisein lo mo kesef litzorcha, v'ocheles imo milele Shabbos lele Shabbos. In addition to everything we've mentioned till now, he gives her also a type of weekly allowance called a mo'al kesef for small purchases. And the Mishnah says that the ocheles imo, she, and here we're just going to translate, the Gemara will elaborate on this, but ocheles imo, she will eat with him every Friday night. Milele Shabbos, lele Shabbos. So that even if the husband is not in the husband has entrusted the wife's support to someone else throughout the week, nevertheless, when it comes to Friday night, they eat together. Ve'im ein nosein lo mo kesef litzorcha, if the husband does not provide her with that weekly cash allowance, ma'isa yodeo shela. And the Gemara, earlier in the Masifta, Rashi mentions Dafnun Tesam Aleph. The term here of Maisideha is a reference to Moser Maisideha, the amount above the expected work production of the woman, the extra amount that she will keep. That's because the husband is not providing her with the Mo'al Kesef, the weekly allowance. Umahi Oisalo, what does she have to produce for him? We just mentioned something called the Mosar Maisideha, the amount above and beyond. So what's the expected amount through which we can then know what constitutes above that amount? Answer, Mishgal Chomesh Sloyim Shti Biuda, Shein Eser Sloyim Begolil. We mentioned before different coinage systems. There are also different measuring systems, so that, let's say, if you were to say that a pound in Yehuda was actually twice the pound of Goliel. So that here, using the Mishnah's terms, Chomesh, the weight of wool that she's expected to spin in Yehuda is called five sela of shti. Shti, in a loom, you have there's two thicknesses of thread. One's called the whoop and one's called the wharf. And the shti is the thinner of those two strands. And she's expected to produce, to spin, five sela is a weight. Five sela in weight of shti in Yehuda. And when you that weight will, in Goliel terms, be Shein Eser Sloim Begolil. It's 10 Sloim in Golil. Don't make the mistake to think that in Golil we expect her to produce twice as much as a married woman in Yehuda. That's not so. It's just that the weight of 10 Sela in Golil is the same as 5 Sela in Yehuda because of their different standard. They might use the same name, but it's a reference to in effect, a different weight. Oy, Mishkal, Eser, Slaim, Orev, Yehuda. Orev is the thicker of the two types of threads that are put on the loom. So Rashi pointed out that it's more difficult to spin the shti type thread, the thin threads, than the thicker ones. So that she's expected to produce more of the thicker kind of thread, being that it's easier to produce. Hence, the Mishnah says, either she's to produce 5 sela of shti in Yehuda, or mishkal eser sloim orev b'Yehuda, shein esrim sloim begolil. If she's going to be working on the orev quality thread, then it would be 10 sela in Yehuda and 20 in Golil. Vim hoisa menika, if a woman is nursing, pochasin lo mimaisidel, we expect less work production. Umosifin lo amazonosem, we're going to add to the amount of food she has to receive. She needs to eat more than a non-pregnant woman. The statistics, the amounts that we've mentioned till now, that's when the husband is a poor man. Avo b'mechubad, a person who is distinguished, I would have to assume in the context of the Mishnah here is distinguished in terms of money. In Maseches Erevin, if I'm not mistaken, it says Rabbi Haya Mechabed es Hashirim. Rabbi showed honor to the wealthy, so that the term mechubad, honor, and wealth are terms appropriate with one another. So if someone is wealthy, hakol lefi kvodo. So then the amount that he's going to be expected to provide his wife in the items mentioned above will be in accordance with his abilities. All we gave above were the, we'll call the minimum amounts. Let me point out that the Gemara from here till 4 lines from the bottom is, I would say, is a highly statistical type Gemara. Statistics meaning numbers and their equivalencies in terms of food that will be featured quite extensively in this section of Gemara. For those who may have learned Maseches Eruvin, this piece of Gemara may seem quite familiar. Before we begin the actual Gemara text, we glance at the margin. We see the note say, the topic heading, Moni Masnisen, who is the author of our Mishnah, Shebishnei Kav Yesh Mozon L'Shavua Yomim. Mishnah mentioned that 2 kav of wheat would be sufficient to cover the woman's food needs for a week. That means, roughly speaking, if every day a person eats 2 meals, and we'll make that certainly is an assumption we're going to make and accept, a person eats 2 meals a day, and 7 days a week, that would be 14 meals. So we have to look for someone who holds that 2 kav, that is the amount featured in our Mishnah, would be the amount for a week's worth of food. And hence the Gemara opens up with the question, Moni Masnisen, in accordance with whom is our Mishnah? Lo Rabbi Yochanan ben Broiko, v'lo Rabbi Shimon. These are 2 Tanoim whose names appear amongst other names that will also appear, but the Gemara is focusing on these names, saying that our Mishnah that said that 2 kav is the quantity of food for a week, namely 14 meals, 2 meals a day, that's 14 meals, the Mishnah that said that is Loka Rabbi Yochanan Broika of the Loka Rabbi Shimon. It doesn't conform to the opinions of either Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka nor Rabbi Shimon. And now we see a source, and you can just take note of the fact we have a long question. The question being, who is the author of our Mishnah? Disnan. We have a Tanaic source that features the amount of food necessary for making an Eruv Tchumen. An Eruv Tchumen, very briefly, is an attempt on the part of an individual when it comes to Shabbos to redefine his Shabbos location, so that instead of dwelling in a city, he would say that he dwells in one direction outside the city, extended in that particular direction, so that in terms of Hilchus Shabbos, a person's entitled to walk 2,000 amos in all directions around the city in which he is dwelling, or the place at which he is found when Shabbos sets in. He can say that instead of walking 2,000 amos in all directions, I would rather walk 4,000 amos east of the city. So in order to do so, he would place a certain quantity of food, and this is what is of importance for us, 2 meals worth of food, at a point up till 2,000 amos east of the city, if that's what his desire is, that will enable him to walk from the point at which he placed the food an additional 2,000 amos from that point. He's redefining his location based on the location of the food that exists as Shabbos sets in. Truth be told, the details of Erev Tchumen are not important for us. What we have to know right now is an issue of food quantity. So the source says, V'kama shi'uro, what is the quantity of food that would constitute 2 meals for the Eruv purposes? Mozon shtei su'udos l'chol echad v'echad. The amount of food that would be 2 meals worth for each person that wants to extend his Shabbos or change his Shabbos location for that particular week, for that particular Shabbos. Mizono l'chol v'lo l'Shabbos, divrei Rabbi Meir. When we talk about 2 meals worth, it's weekday meals, not Shabbos meals. That's Rabbi Meir's approach. Rabbi Yudomer l'Shabbos v'lo l'chol, 2 Shabbos meals, not weekday meals. Vizeh miskavnin lahokel. Both Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda are, their intention is to be lenient, to require a lesser amount of food, each one respectively. So if you look at Rabbi Meir, he said 2 weekday meals. Rabbi Meir's weekday meal, during Rabbi Meir's weekday meal, he would consume less bread than he would during Shabbos. So it's 2 meals worth of bread that he would eat on a weekday meal, or along with a weekday meal, as opposed to a Shabbos meal. Rabbi Yehuda has just the opposite. His bread consumption during Shabbos was less than his bread consumption during the week. So 2 Shabbos meals of bread for Rabbi Yehuda is less than two weekday meals for Rabbi Yehuda. That's what the source means when Zev is that each one, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, were trying to be Mekil, each one respectively. Rashi fills in some more details, but with regard to our discussion right now, we don't have to emphasize Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. The following names are more significant. So what we're going to do is we're going to read the source. The source is going to be, at first glance, for most people learn this, will appear obscure, it will be difficult, but we've provided some, quasi-charts on the side of our Gemara, which we'll then go through, and hopefully we'll be able to make things much easier. First, we'll read the text. Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka Omer, what is the quantity of food that constitutes 2 meals? We should just remind you that when we opened this section of Gemara, we said that our Mishnah that says 2 kav is the quantity of a week's worth of meals, 14 meals, 2 meals a day. 2 kav is that amount, is not like the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka and Rabbi Shimon. As we go through the source, bear in mind that they are presenting quantities that will equal 2 meals. We simply have to then multiply to see that our Mishnah of two kav equaling 14 meals is not what the calculations would result in when you multiply Reb Yochanan ben Broka's amount and Reb Shimon's amount, each one by seven, because the amounts Reb Yochanan ben Broka and Reb Shimon present to us in this source is the amount for two meals, because they're dealing with the issue of Eruv Tumin. The source says, Reb Yochanan Broka Omer, Kikar, a loaf, Halokuach Bepunyon. Punyon is a type of coin. It's a loaf of bread that you would be able to buy for a punyon. Me arba so'in besela. Sela is also a coin. It's a much larger coin than a punyon. And four saw is a quantity that's much larger than the kikar that's featured in this source. So Rav Yochanan Broka is telling us two meals is contained within a loaf that you would buy for a punyon when four saw of wheat would go for a sela. Reb Shimon Omer, Shtei Yodos Likikar, how much is there in two meals worth of bread? It's Shtei Yodos Likikar, it's two-thirds of a loaf, Misholosh Kikros Likav, when three full loaves are contained in a kav. So what you have to do then is, you have to subdivide here the three full loaves that would equal a kav, how much is contained in two-thirds of a loaf. Again, as we said before, we'll deal with the numbers in an orderly fashion when we look at the side of the Gemara very shortly. The source goes on with a series of additional halachas, but we do not have to emphasize, we don't have to really offer too much explanation, do not dwell on the continuation of this source other than the minimum amount that we're going to say, because it gets off the topic. The amount that we've given so far is an amount for Eruv Tchumin. It's the amount that would be equivalent of two meals worth of bread. Half that amount, Chetzya Lebeis Hamanuga. Half that amount has relevance to laws regarding someone who is in a house that's afflicted with tzaras. How long must he dwell or stay, tarry in the house in order to become tome? A presence in a tzaras afflicted house renders the individual tome. But how long would he have to tarry in the house? The amount of time to eat bread, half the quantity that was mentioned for Eruv Tumin. V'chatzi chetzya l'fsoilas agvia, and half that amount, means half the amount of the base hamanuga that we just mentioned, if one would eat tome food, half that amount, so then he would become, on a rabbinic level, the person who ate tome food to that amount would become tome. Gvia means his body. His own body would become tome, and that has ramifications with regard to eating of truma, that a person who ate tome food and he himself became tome cannot then eat truma until he purifies himself. And then half of that amount, the chatzi, chatzi chatzio, lekabel tumas ochlin. In order for food to be able to absorb food defilement. And when we talk about absorbing food defilement, let us talk about food to become defiled in order for it to have the power to communicate tuma to other food, then that the minimum amount of food required for that is half the amount that was referred to when we dealt with psul gvia. And psul gvia was half the amount with regard to that which was referred to by the Beis HaMenuga, and Beis HaMenuga was half the amount required for Eruvei Tumin. Again, my apologies if that seems a bit abstract or unclear. It's not important for our efforts right now. Now we get down to brass tacks. You see, the Gemara continues with the question, money, our Mishnah that said two kav is equal to 14 meals. It's according to whom? E. Reb Yochanan ben Broka. If you go through all of the statistics that we'll try to present shortly, if you think that our Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, well, Tamni Havyan, two kav, according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka's calculations, two kav will yield only 8 meals. Our Mishnah puts forward that two kav would equal 14 meals. The Rabbi Shimon, and if you were to say that our Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Shimon, two kav, according to Rabbi Shimon, would yield tamni, sorry, havyan, 18 meals, not 14 meals. So our Mishnah is somewhere in between. It's not Rabbi Yochanan Broka whose calculations would lead us to two kav equaling 8 meals, nor Rabbi Shimon, according to whom two kav would yield 18 meals. So how do we get to all of these numbers? So let us look at the side. We have some notes on the side. You can find them by looking at the starred notes. There's a single starred note, and it says on the side of our Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. One sela, these are, we'll just say these are statistics, these are amounts, and we'll work with them as givens. One sela, sela is a coin. One sela contains 48 punyons. Punyon is a much smaller coin. It's 1/48 of a sela. Another point that we saw is that one sela will buy you, you'll be able to buy with one sela 4 sa'ah. That was mentioned in the source. 4 sa'ah is a quantity of wheat. One sa'ah, another statistic that you should know, equals 6 kav. And that would cost you 12 punyon. Now, how did we get to that? Well, we just saw before that 4 sa'ah is the same as is equal to 1 sela, and that 1 sela was also 48 punyon. So instead of talking about 4 sa'ah costing you, let's say, 48 punyon, 1 sa'ah would cost you 12 punyon. Now we go to the cost of 1/2 a kav. On the line just before, we made reference to 6 kav. So here you're dealing with 1/2 a kav. That's 1/12 the amount that just referred to. 1/2 kav is then 1/12 of 6 kav. If 6 kav will cost you 12 punyon, 1/2 a kav is 1 punyon. What did Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka say about the amount of food that would constitute 2 sudos? Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka said it's the amount that you find in a loaf that you would buy for 1 punyon. Of course, when 4 sa'ah was a sela. That's what we've described just now. 1 punyon will get you a loaf that's 1/2 a kav. And that loaf, a kikar, is 2 meals. Therefore, 2 kav, which is a quantity we saw in the Mishnah for a week's worth of meals, what is 2 kav going to be equal to in the eyes of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka? 2 kav, according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, we've written on this side, 2 kav shemofia b'mishnah lefi cheshbonish Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, 8 su'udos, not lo yudalad, not 14. How did we get to 8 meals? Well, if 1/2 a kav is 2 meals, how many half kavs are there in 2 full kavs? There are 4 half kavs. Now, each half kav represented 2 meals. So, if there are 4 half kavs, and each half kav is 2 meals, it's 4 times 2 is 8 meals. So that demonstrates a, that presents a problem for us. Our Mishnah then is not authored by Rabbi Yochanan Broka, because our Mishnah spoke about two kav equaling 14 meals, and the calculations according to Rabbi Yochanan Broka lead us to say that two kavs would be the equivalent of 8 meals. We also saw Reb Shimon. Well, according to Reb Shimon, 3 kav or I should say, correction, 3 loaves was the equivalent of 1 kav. 1 loaf is therefore 1/3 of a kav. That should be obvious. 1/3 just so happens to be 3/9. That's a just an equivalent fraction. 3/9 of a kav is the same as 1/3 of a kav, and that's 1 full kikar. What was the amount that Reb Shimon referred to when he spoke about 2 meals worth? He spoke about not a full kikar, but rather 2/3. He said shtei yodos. Shtei yodos means 2/3 of a loaf. How much is contained in 2/3 of a loaf, according to Reb Shimon? Well, if a full loaf is 3/9, what's 2/3 of 3/9? What's 2 out of 3 parts when you're dealing with that fraction? 3/9 are 3 parts, 3/9. 2/3, 2 of them would be 2/9. So we can say that 2/3 of a loaf is 2/9 of a kav. And that 2/9 of a kav is shtei sudos, is 2 meals worth. 2/9 of a kav is the same as 2/3 of a loaf. And Reb Shimon said 2/3 of a loaf, given that 3 loaves is a kav, so 2/3 of 1 loaf is 2/9 of a kav. We can also say that 1/9 of a kav is 1 meal. The 2/3 of a loaf was a statistic necessary for Eruv Tchumen. Eruv Tchumen required 2 meals worth. What, how much is there in 1 meal? So, it follows that 1/9 of a kav is 1 meal. So let's ask ourselves, and 2 full kavs, how many meals will there be? So if 1/9 of a kav is 1 meal, how many 1/9 kavs are there in 2 full kavs? 18/9. 9/9 is 1 kav. 2 kav, therefore, is 2. It's twice that amount. It's 18/9. 1/9 is 1 meal, so 18/9 is 18 meals. Oh, so what do we see here? We see that 2 kav, according to Reb Shimon, results in 18 meals, not 14. Once again, our Mishnah does not appear to be like Reb Shimon either. As the Gemara goes on, we see a new marking. You see a bow tie shape. And on the side, under our Mivne heading, the bow tie shitos tanoim shemishnosenu kemoisom. The Gemara will suggest our Mishnah could, in fact, be like Rabbi Yochanan Broka. And later in the Gemara, it'll say it could be like Reb Shimon as well. Each one according to his own shita. It's our job then to see how do we get what appears right now, the 8 meals of Rabbi Yochanan Broka, to somehow work out to 14, or the 18 meals referred to Reb Shimon as being somehow 14. 18 is not 14, and 8 is not 14 either. How do we resolve all of this? So that's the Gemara's task at hand. The Oilum Rabbi Yochanan Broka. And we have to factor in Rav Chisda. The triangles are tshuvos, are answers liyashev mishnosenu, to resolve our Mishnah with these respective tanoim. That's the purpose of the triangle, to highlight the resolutions, and the diamond are two shiurim shel Rav Chisda. You'll see two statistics brought in the name of Rav Chisda, and that itself poses a problem. How can the same author present two different statistics on the same topic? That's why we will have highlighted Rav Chisda's name. So in the meantime, our Mishnah that spoke about two kav as being 14 meals, that's according to Rabbi Yochanan Broka, but we have to add some information. Uchdom Rav Chisto, Tsei Mehem Shlish Lechenvoni, Hachonami, Aisi Tilsa Shadi Olayhu. First we'll translate and then we'll go through a more extensive explanation. Rav Chisto, in a different context, said that you have to take off a third for the chenvoni. The chenvoni is the fellow who sells. He's the grocery man. He sells. He actually prepares the breads. He bakes the breads and then sells them. So he profits one. One third profit is what the chenvoni gets. So Rav Chisto, in a different context, spoke about, well, you've got to take off a third for the chenvoni. So here too, in our calculations, the numbers that we saw by Rav Yochanan Broka, you have to take that number and add to it a third. Aisi tilsa, add another third, shadi olayhu, and put it upon, add it to the eight. Rabbi Yochanan Broka gave us two kav, resulting in eight seudos. Yeah, that two kav will give you eight seudos after the chenvoni took off his profit. But in reality, the two kav of wheat, when you grind it and you make it into flour and you bake it, it will in actuality produce not eight meals worth, but add a third means you take eight, divide it into two, and add one of those upon it. So what we would do is you take eight, and you add four, because four represents a third of the new number, namely 12. Let's take a look at the Rashi, five lines under the Gemara, text. Tzei mehem shlish chenvoni, Rabbi Yochanan, that's Rabbi Yochanan Broka, lo shi'er bechatzi kav, he didn't make his statement of two meals based on a half a kav, ela, but rather Rabbi Yochanan Ben Broka said that two meals is bekikar halakuch bepunyon menechenvoni. It's a loaf that you would buy from the merchant in exchange for paying him a punyon. Vehu lokach arbesoyin chitin besela. The chenvoni, we mentioned before, he's not only the vendor, but he's the baker. He's the businessman. He buys, that businessman, the chenvoni, buys four sa'ah, arba sa'in chitin, four sa'ah of wheat, besela, and he pays a sela for it. And it you have to know, umistakir shlish betorach. He profits 33.3%, a third, because of all of his efforts. He buys raw wheat. He has to grind it. He has to make it, and after that makes it into flour, and all the procedures that are necessary until you finally get a baked loaf. That's all upon the chenvoni, so he has a right to a respectable profit. So he profits a third. So now, what we know about the chenvoni is that he bought four sa'ah for a sela. We also know that when he sells his loaves, he's profiting a third. That means that when he sells three loaves, two of them help him break even, and the third loaf that he sells is profit for him. Nimtzu, the result of all of this is b'chatzi kav shalosh seudos. When you deal with the simple measures, a half a kav, which, by the way, we pointed out earlier, a half a kav is 1/48 of a 4 sa'ah. There's 6 kav in 1 sa'ah. There are 24 kav in 4 sa'ah, and there are 48 half kavim in 4 sa'ah. So, when the chenvoni sells, when he produces a half a kav, he's actually producing 3 meals worth. Hashtayim hu mocher bepunyon, 2 meals worth, which is 2 meals worth he will sell for a punyon, shenosan, that the customer paid for. Vagimel mistaker, the third is the third is going to be his profit. So once again, in a half a kav, in reality, not like we thought before that a half a kav represented 2 meals. No, a half a kav represented the amount that a chenvoni would sell plus his profit of a third. So that when it comes to Reb Yochanan Broka, he said that if you buy with 1 punyon, you buy a loaf, and that loaf represents 2 meals worth. You have to realize that that's what the customer bought. The customer bought a loaf that has 2 meals worth of bread in it. But as far as the amount that a half a kav will produce, it produces not 2 meals worth. A half a kav will produce 3 meals worth of food. We now turn back to the Gemara. Our original calculations led us to believe that Rabbi Yochanan Broka's half a kav produced, Rabbi Yochanan Broka's 2 kav would yield 8 meals, and now we're telling you that in reality, from 2 kav, according to Rabbi Yochanan Broka, you would be able to get 12 meals worth of bread. Nevertheless, Akati, the Gemara asks, Tarti, sorry, Havi, that's still 12, and she needs 14 meals. So how can our Mishnah say, give her 2 kav? Granted, according to Rabbi Yochanan Broka, 2 kav would provide 12 meals for the woman, but she's being supported by a apotropis. She deserves 14 meals, so 2 kav isn't enough. The Gemara answers, why do you say that 2 kav is not enough? Eichel esimo lele Shabbos. She eats with him Friday night, so that the 12 meals that the 2 kav represents, that's 12 meals for the 6 days of the week, and she eats with him Friday night. So 12 meals are enough for her. So the husband will be giving her directly the food of Friday night. So that pshat is helpful if you say that achila, when the source, when the Mishnah said she eats with him every Friday night, that means actual eating. So that meal is covered by the husband himself, and the executor doesn't have to provide that for the lady. Elo lamandi omar achila equals tashmish ma'iko lameimar. But according to the interpretation that achila meant intimacy, So we're still short meals. 12 meals is not enough. V'od, and a second, and maybe more obvious problem is tleisar havyon. The 2 kav, as we've said till now, will get her 12 meals. The Friday night meal, that'll be the 13th meal, but she needs 14 meals. So we've accounted only for 13. So the 2 kav is still not enough. Ella, Kidom Rav Chisda, say mehem mechza lechenvoni. Hachinami asya palga v'shadi alayhu. When it comes to the two kav and what it actually produces, so for a person that buys a loaf for a punyon, so it's true he's getting two meals worth. But that's after the chenvoni took off his profit. And how much does the chenvoni profit? Not one third, but rather one half. So that if after profits we see that a half a kav equals two meals, in truth, a half a kav would produce four meals, because the half kav represented the half kav equaling two meals represented the amount after the chenvoni took off his profit. So when we deal with a half a kav, a person will be able to produce from a half a kav in reality not two meals but four meals. So that having been said, we're going to add not a third but add a half. And when we say a half, it means you take your basic number and add it, getting a new number, the original number being half of the new number. So if the original number, half, a half a kav, was four meals, in reality, originally was two meals, in reality, if you're going to make it, not the chenvoni, but you're going to take a half a kav, you'll be able to get four meals out of that. So if a half a kav is four meals, two kav that the Mishnah mentioned would be four times that amount, because in two kav you've got four halves. So if a half a kav was four meals, two kav will be 16 meals. That's 16 instead of the original eight. Okay, 16 meals, that's a nice quantity. So if you give the lady two kav, you're in effect giving her enough for the week, you're giving her 16 meals. The Gemara asks, it's very nice that we're being generous, but that's not what we're looking for. We're looking for accurate statistics. We have a bracketed section within which the bracket deals with the seeming contradiction in Rav Chisda's, but right after the brackets, you see, Ihochi Shitzari Havyon. If that be the case, then the woman's getting 16 meals for the week. Well, come on, we ask in wonderment. 16 meals, for how would you get to that number? I'll tell you how you can get to that number. For six of the 7 days, putting Shabbos aside for a minute, for six of the days, two meals a day, that's 12. Shabbos, everyone knows, in Shabbos there's an extra meal. We call it Sudah Shlishit, some could call Shalish Shudis. There's a daya that says on Shabbos one doesn't eat three meals, one eats four meals. It's the opinion of an individual opinion, a minor opinion. Are you then going to say that our Mishnah that says the woman is to get two kav, and that two kav in reality produces 16 meals, and in order to come up with that number 16, you'd have to say she's eating four meals on Shabbos? Come on, Karebi Chidka, that's that individual opinion. Are you saying that our Mishnah represents this minority opinion of Rabbi Chidka, Diomar Arbis Sudis Chayav Odom Lechol B'Shabbos, that a person is obligated to eat four meals on Shabbos? It's quite unusual that we'd have a Stam Mishnah, an unnamed Mishnah, which is considered authoritative, or I should say not so much an unnamed Mishnah, but we're dealing with we are correct, the Mishnah, the Shnei Kav, is part of the unnamed section of the Mishnah, and in accordance with a minority opinion. The Gemara says that is not a problem. Afilu tema rabbonon. Our Mishnah doesn't have to be according to Reb Chidka that talks about four meals on Shabbos, but like the rabbonon, three meals on Shabbos. So, but three meals on Shabbos would mean 6 days of the week, two meals a day, that's 12, plus three for Shabbos, that's 15. What about the fact that we said that two kav would yield 16 meals? Dal chadolachir parchi, take off one from the 16, and that's given the lady is given that that extra meals quantity for wayfarers, for archi parchi guests that might be passing through. So that the 16 meals that the lady is given in the form of two kav is a justifiable amount that will contain enough food for her weekday meals, two meals a day, for her three meals of Shabbos, and an extra quantity of food, extra meals worth for guests. Hashta de'osis la'achi, now that we've come up with this analysis, afilu teimo Rebbe Shimon, our Mishnah can conform with Rebbe Shimon. Now, according to Rebbe Shimon, two kav, as we demonstrated earlier, would yield 18 meals. How does a woman come off needing 18 meals for the week? L'Rabbanan, according to the Rabbanan, that a person eats three meals on Shabbos, so that would result in 15 meals for the week. That's 12 for the weekdays plus 3 for Shabbos, 15. Dal tlas li'archi u'pachi. From the 18 that Reb Shimon would give her, take off 3 meals worth of food for the visitors. And the Rabbi Chitka, according to Rabbi Chitka, that a person is going to eat actually 16 meals during the week, including Shabbos, that is, 16 total. The 18 of Reb Shimon is accounted for as follows: Dal Tarti La'archi Upachi. According to Rabbi Chitka, all that a person needs to receive is an additional 2 meals for the benefit of guests. So what we've done is resolved our Mishnah with concerning the issue of authorship as being either according to Rabbi Yochanan Broka or according to Rabbi Shimon, with all of the different adjustments we just made. Now, we did skip a bracketed section, and that is now the focus of our attention. Kashya de Rav Chisda de Rav Chisda. We seem to have an internal contradiction within Rav Chisda. Why? If you look at the first diamond, Rav Chisda says that a Chenvoni profits a third. According to the second diamond, the Chenvoni profits a half. Lo kashya. There is no contradiction. Ha ba'asra de yohiv tzivi, ha ba'asra de lo yohavi tzivi. And we look directly in Rashi. Ba'asra, we're looking at Rashi 4 lines from the bottom of the page. Ba'asra de yohiv tzivi, mi shemoicher chitim lechenvoni, lasos kikros velimkor b'shuk, the wheat supplier to the Chenvoni. The Chenvoni is the one who's going to make the, he's going to process the wheat into loaves and sell them. B'mokim shu noisein l'chenvoni eitzim lefois, where the wheat provider, the wheat wholesaler, also provides the fuel, the eitzim is wood, the fuel for the Chenvoni. Eino mistakir elo shlish. The Chenvoni doesn't need to profit any more than a third. He doesn't lay out any additional money for wood. He doesn't have to go out on his own to buy the wood. It's included in the wheat that he purchases. And Rashi goes on, Uvamokum Sheino Noisin Eitzim. We'll just assume that that the guy who's supplying the wood, it doesn't result in the Chenvoni paying extra because he's also getting the wood. The guy who supplies the wheat, he throws the wood on top, so to speak. It's a freebie. So the Chenvoni he's not paying any extra for the wood, so he doesn't have to cover the expenditures through added profits. So he profits one third. However, Mokum Shena Noisein Eitzim, where the wheat supplier supplies only wheat, it doesn't supply the fuel, Me'akev La'atzmoy Mechza, the Chenvoni will keep for himself half of the stuff that he sells for profit. shememait hakikros limkor biyoker kedei yitzias ha'etzim. The fact that the chenboni has to lay out funds for the wood, that forces him to reduce the amount of kikros that he will sell simply to break even, needing more kikros to sell in order to realize the profit. And the profit, that extra profit he needs to compensate for his fuel expenditures. So there's no, so the main thing for us to realize, there's no contradiction within Rav Chisda's between his statement of a third profit versus a half profit. The Mishnah had made reference to, in addition to the possibility of feeding the woman wheat, the statistic of 2 kav of wheat was mentioned, or 4 kav of barley. Rabbi Yossi said that this reference to barley would have been made only by Rabbi Shmuel, who was near Edom. So the Gemara, Omer of Yossi, 4 lines from the bottom, Lo pasak sorin v'chulei, Elo be'edom hu de'achlin sorin b'kuli alma lo achli. Rabbi Yossi gives us the impression that because Rabbi Shmuel was near Edom, that's why any reference was made to barley, because otherwise no one eats barley. Is that true? Is it only in Edom that they eat barley and the rest of the world? No. Hachi komar. So the more accurate understanding of the Mishnah is as follows. Lo posak sorim kiflayim b'chitim elo Rabbi Shmuel she'asomuch le'edom. The amount mentioned in the Mishnah of barley was twice the amount mentioned for wheat. So Rabbi Yossi is telling us that this idea of a double amount of barley relative to the wheat, that would have been stated only by the likes of Rabbi Shmuel, who was near Edom. The barley from Edom was of poor quality. My impression is that there was probably a lot of debris, maybe a lot of shells, or the amount of kernel available for making barley flour in any given grain there was significantly less, so that you'd have to give a very large quantity, twice the quantity of raw barley, in order for the person, the woman, to realize a week's worth of food. Double the amount relative to the wheat in barley terms in order to get that week's amount of food. The Nosei Lo Chatzi Kav Kitnis, the Mishnah mentioned a half a kav of kitnis, the Ilu Yayin Lo Kotoni. The Mishnah doesn't make any reference to a wine provision for the woman. Once again, we emphasize we're talking about a woman who is being supported through an executor. Her husband is not with her, and the Mishnah makes no reference of the executor providing the woman wine. Mesayel Rabbi Elazar, this supports Rabbi Elazar, Diomar Rabbi Elazar. The Gemara continues at the top of Daf Samachay. Ein poiskin yenois liisha. We do not supply, we don't arrange for wine to be provided for a woman. The Im Tomar, you might ask, what do you mean? What, women don't drink wine? The Pasuk says, Elcha acharei mahavai noisnei lachmi umeimai tzamri ufishti shamni vishikuyoi. The Pasuk describes a woman who is following her beloved, who provides her with all kinds of food matters and clothing matters. And it says, Vishikuyoi. Shikuyoi means like mashke, a drink. And the drink we are associating with wine. So women do drink wine. The Gemara says, no, Shikuyoi in the Pasuk is not a reference to wine, but Devarim Hoy Shoisho Mishtoi Kekes Alehen, things that a woman desires. So the root of the word, the Shin Kuf in that word, isn't from what we thought the word mashke, but rather hishtokikut, to desire. Umay nihu, and my ninu, what are those things that women desire? Tachshitim, jewelry. So the point of this last section of Gemara dealt with the idea that we do not provide women who are being supported through a sholish, through a through an apotropis. We don't provide her with a wine provision. The Gemara will continue with more discussions concerning this matter of wine, but Amir Tzashem will pick that up in our next shiur. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, especially in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.